Welcome back to the Urology Care Podcast. I have a very special guest today, and I'm going to let him introduce himself now.
Hi, I'm Paul Nelson. I am a clinical sexologist. I work full-time in men's sexual medicine in a medical setting. I am also president of the Erectile Dysfunction Foundation, and we run the website franktalk.org, which is, believe it or not, the only nonprofit website around for erectile dysfunction. It's an online community of about 50,000 men a month who come and share with each other and support each other and encourage each other in dealing with various sexual function issues.
Do want to talk a little bit about sexual health in general, but also get at some myths today and hopefully debunk them here with Paul. We know there are sexual health issues that are physical, but some question other sexual issues as being mental. Some people are saying that there are sexual issues that are purely mental. What's your take on that?
I think they are completely inseparable. Even if something is completely organic and physical in nature, the miniature mental crisis, and sometimes it's not so miniature, that accompanies a sexual function issue can cause a lot of emotional distress. So, for example, if a young man, say, for example, we're always accusing them of being psychogenic in nature, their sexual function issues.
What does that mean, psychogenic?
Psychogenic means psycho of the brain, genic, starting.
Okay.
So psychogenic is, it's caused by mental issues.
Okay.
Say, for example, one night he's really tired or he had too much to drink or he was nervous or something like that and he couldn't get an erection. What happens right away is the panic sets in, and even though he may be fine and there was an organic cause of being too tired or too much adrenaline in his system or something like that, instantly it becomes a mental issue because of the panic that sets in.
Okay.
That happens with other things as well, with Peyronie's disease. They wake up, their penis is bending, and they freak out.
Sure.
You cannot separate the physical from the mental when it comes to sex.
Yeah, we always encourage patients to visit urologyhealth.org/Peyronie's disease to learn more about that. Please talk to your doctor if you're having any of the early symptoms of that, because we know with Peyronie's disease, the earlier you can see someone about that, the better.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about, is something like low libido or lack of a sexual desire, is that mental or are there some physical things?
It's both. I tell everyone, because it has to do with the body, your starting place is always see a doctor. If you have lost your interest in sex and you're not sure why, absolutely start with your doctor and rule out the physical things. If he says, as far as he can tell, everything is fine, then at the same time, concurrently, while you're seeing your doctor, talk to someone, see what your relationship is like. Are you really into this person that you're with, or are you bored with sex? Do you have sexual trauma issues? You can't separate one from the other, but I think you will always get into trouble if you assume everything is psychogenic or most things are psychogenic.
Sure.
If it has to do with a body function, see your doctor.
That's a good takeaway right there. So I want to talk a little bit more about sexual health myths, and something that seems to come up is, first of all, can you just briefly explain to us what a sexually transmitted disease is?
Oh, a sexually transmitted disease is any virus or bacterium or condition that can be spread from one person to another through sexual activity. It doesn't have to be sexual intercourse. It can be various sexual acts, and it can even be just skin-to-skin contact.
Now, does that mean you would not be able to catch an STD from, say, something like a toilet seat?
Good question. That's the big fear everyone has. And for the big answer is no, you cannot catch an STD from a toilet seat. There are, I suppose, bizarre examples where, but the herpes virus does not live very long on the toilet seat. You know, certainly HIV doesn't live on a toilet seat. Yes, if you share a bath towel or a bed with someone who have pubic lice or what we call crabs, yes, you can get that from sharing a towel or a bed with someone who has crabs. Yes.
That's actually a good point. How about this myth? I'm a huge fan of sports in particular. I like the World Cup, and it always seems to come up every year. They say having sex prior to a competition will decrease your level of performance on the field. Is there any validity to any of that?
Good question. You know what? It's one of those things that I don't think has ever been studied. I know anecdotally, even opera singers that I know will not have sex before a performance because they claim it takes an edge. Now, I will tell you, my theory is because after an orgasm in the male body, prolactin floods the body, which is why men feel...
What's that?
Prolactin is it's the hormone that in women creates lactin, the breast milk, right? In men, its function is to turn off sexual desire. So when men, after a climax, after an orgasm, an ejaculation, they feel very sleepy, they feel, just want to cuddle up and go to sleep, that's due to the prolactin. They lose all sexual desire, and that's all due to prolactin. So the idea that you would want some hormone to course through your body that makes you tired and sleepy before a big game or performance is probably counterintuitive. So I'm not sure there's been a study, but I'm going to tell you anecdotally and from a let's think it through, I would say it's probably a good possibility that there's some truth to that statement.
Very interesting. How about the old myth that an STD can't be spread through oral sex?
Oh, yeah. No, oral sex can spread many STDs. Believe it or not, one of the most common now is gonorrhea. People engage in oral sex and they get gonorrhea in their throat and they don't even realize they have it. And they may have a sore throat. They think it's a cold. They have oral sex with somebody else and sure enough, they get gonorrhea. So that's a real prime example, but you can catch herpes through oral sex. As last I talked to an HIV specialist, he said, we don't know for sure, but it's one of those things, folks, it's not worth it. You can still catch STDs through oral sex.
What about the myth that after a certain age, people are no longer having sex? Myth that sex is for young people.
That's a perfect example of our discomfort in our society with aging. People are sexual from birth until death. And this idea that somehow we don't like our bodies anymore or we don't like how our bodies can feel anymore past a certain age is just silly. That comes from a youth-obsessed culture. I will tell you, I have patients who are 96 years old who are still having sex roughly once a week. Their sex looks completely different than the sex that a 21-year-old is having, but they're perfectly fine. Because most 21-year-olds are engaged in what I call procreative style sex, which is intercourse based. You get to 90 and you know what? Intercourse just isn't important anymore. But they're still having great fulfilling sex lives. They just look a little bit different.
Can you tell us about just a kind of definition of what premature ejaculation is?
Oh, good question. Premature ejaculation is when the person or persons involved in the sex act feel that the climax occurs earlier than they want it to. How's that? Doctors have come up with a clinical definition of less than 1 minute after penetration, but the fact is, if a couple is perfectly happy, they have sex for 3 hours, but they don't have intercourse, and then they have 1 minute of intercourse, they're probably very happy with their sex life. So,
can you, in your eyes, what is the difference between sex and intercourse?
Oh, well, sex is a huge...
In the context that you're saying.
Yeah, sex is a huge category, and intercourse is a subset. If we did a Venn diagram, all intercourse is sex, but not all sex is intercourse. Sex is simply the act of exchanging erotic energy with each other, if you want to get a little metaphysical about it. But any act can be sexual in nature.
What about erectile dysfunction? Can you give us a general rundown on what that is?
Yeah, it's far more prevalent than anybody is willing to talk about. And it, even though we have all these commercials to get us laughing about it and make maybe sort of a joke about it, which is unfortunate, 50% of men over 40, and we know that somewhere around 20% of men in their 20s have erectile dysfunction. And it's basically any time that your penis is not erect enough to complete, to attempt or complete a sexual act, whether it's intercourse or oral sex or even masturbation. Sure. Anytime your penis is not working and allowing you to complete an activity to orgasm.
So can you tell us what you do? What's your...
In my day job?
Tell us about your day job.
I work at Mays Men's Health, which is a men's sexual medicine clinic with a urologist, Michael Werner. And I work with men who have various sexual dysfunctions across the board, any kind of sexual dysfunction. And I try to integrate the medical treatment with immediate treatment so that immediately the guys, no matter what is going on in their sex performance, they're able to reestablish a connected, intimate sex life with their partner as soon as possible. So, for example, if a man can't have intercourse for various reasons, that doesn't mean he can't have sex. That just means he can't have intercourse. Yeah. But most of our... Well, because we get no education in our country about what sex is or how to have sex, everyone assumes it's intercourse. And so if we can't have intercourse, we can't do anything. So I do a lot of sexuality education to help couples reestablish understanding what sex is, what intimacy is, what connection is, what play is. Yeah. Instead of it being performance-based, I get couples giving each other great erotic massages, and they discover this is a lot of fun without the pressure of intercourse.
Do you work on the relationship side of things? Do you help men with their relationships with their partner?
I don't have time to be a real therapist.
So you focus on the sexual side.
Sexual side. I will tell them, you know, I give them scripts, talk to your partner. Many of them will bring in their partner to talk together.
And are there any other sexual myths that you've come across in your line of work that you'd like to debunk today?
Oh, the number one is two things.
Sure.
If men have any problem, women instantly think it's their fault. If a man has erectile dysfunction, women think, is it me? He's not into me. I'm too old. I'm too fat. I'm too ugly. There's somebody else. Maybe he's gay. The fact is, if a man gets diabetes, is it due to her cooking? No. A man's physical performance has nothing to do with her or as a reflection of her as a person or her sexuality. If men can't climax, it doesn't mean they didn't enjoy the sex. It just means they didn't climax. There's no meaning behind it. And the worst thing a woman can do is accuse the man of, well, you're not into me, or I'm not good enough, because that puts him in a possible position of proving that she is, which he can't do. And the other thing is, everyone is responsible for their own fun when it comes to sex. Men have sort of been raised to feel that they're in charge of sex. It's my job to give her an orgasm. No, it's your job to be an attentive lover.
What do you mean by that?
Well, if it's her body, there's no way you're going to know what she's feeling. So you have to ask her what she wants. She has to ask what she wants for, or you need to learn over time what, for example, a woman wants to achieve an orgasm.
The old saying, use your words.
Use your words, yes. So many men think, okay, I have to give her an orgasm by sticking my penis in her vagina. Well, the fact is, many, many, many women do not climax from intercourse. But men haven't been told that. And it's my job to give it to her. And I'm like, no, we're all responsible for our own fun. We communicate to each other. We're attentive. We have fun. We're playful. We're engaging. We're vulnerable, open, and connected. And that is what sex is all about.
You mentioned in your speech right there, delayed ejaculation or inhibited ejaculation. What is that? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that can be certainly, that is the condition where it takes longer to reach climax than one or other the partner wishes. Okay, and it can happen with women and men. There are physical causes for that. It can be lack of sensation. It can be low testosterone in men. It can be all kinds of medical interactions. There are a zillion different reasons for delayed ejaculation, why a man can't reach climax. Mm-hmm. Again, he has to go to his doctor to rule out all those things. If those are ruled out, we then work on arousal and stimulation issues and anxiety issues and things like that. But I also then will tell patients, the only time you need to ejaculate, especially in a vagina, is when you're trying to make a baby. So let go of this belief, this held fast, almost religious belief that you have to ejaculate in a vagina in order for sex to be worthwhile or rewarding. Okay. The fact is, you can have great sex without an orgasm.
Do you have any other final thoughts or sexual health advice you'd like to give to our audience before we wrap up here today?
First of all, start talking about sex. It's much harder to talk about sex than have sex. So the conversation should start
with, one more time.
It is much harder to talk about sex than have sex.
There you go, okay.
I tell people we all need scripts to get us over the hump, the difficulty of talking about it. And it's best to talk about sex when you're not having sex. Talk about sex over lunch. Talk about sex over dinner. And the number one thing is spontaneous sex as being the best way to have sex is a complete myth, and it is hurting marriages. Nothing happens in life that's worthwhile that's spontaneous constantly. Spontaneous sex is great. I'm not taking it off the table.
Yeah.
But the idea that that's what we rely upon for our sexual life is just ridiculous. We should protect time for sex so that we know that no matter what, Saturday afternoon or Sunday morning or Monday night, whatever, is our protected time, and we're going to connect physically at that time. And you can run up all week sending each other texts, whispering a quick phone call, I'm looking forward to Monday night, I'm looking forward. Trust me, if you do that, couples will be looking forward to planned sex.
Paul Nelson is our guest today. franktalk.org for more information. Anything else? Any other ways they can reach you?
No, that's the best way by far. paul@franktalk.org.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Urology Care Foundation, the official foundation of the American Urological Association.